Welcome to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. A week into this war of choice, Trump is demanding Iran surrender unconditionally. Whatever that means. Is sending in ground troops next? Meanwhile, the global economy is going off the rails. To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guest, George Samueli in Budapest. He's a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube in Locals. And here in Moscow, we have Mark Sloboda. He's an international relations and security analyst. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's kick it off with Mark here. We're a little over a week into this war of choice against Iran. A little over a week ago, the United States and Israel unilaterally and without reason, because they haven't been able to give a reason, attacked Iran. Where are we right now?
Well, I actually think they've given plenty of reasons. Just the number of them they have provided, shifting from one to another, and the paucity of those regions, makes clear that the real purpose is simply for the regime change and or balkanization and destruction of Iran to firmly cement U.S.-Israeli hegemony over the Middle East. Everything else is just footnotes or red herrings, whether be it civilian nuclear power programs, the effrontery of Iran having missiles capable of hitting Iran, or Trump hasn't even really bothered to make the usual human rights and democracy accusations that usually come from the West in situation. He's not even bothering with that. But contrary to some people's thoughts a few weeks ago, there's no longer any question that the United States is in this to the hilt to destroy Iran. Numerous U.S. officials, including President Trump himself, are now talking openly and apparently quite seriously about ground troops. And there are reports from the ground that the 82nd Airborne Division is assembling. We now have reports that three more U.S. and allied carrier groups are headed to the Middle East. The George W. Bush from the United States is on his way, as well as the French Charles de Gaulle, which will take up position off the coast of Israel, where the USS Poopy Jerry, I mean the Gerald Ford, is now moving around the Red Sea to take up through the Suez Canal and the Red Sea to take up position with the Abraham Lincoln off the coast of Iran, but in that vicinity, and also the British Prince of Wales. You don't assemble five carrier groups and start mobilizing, your specialties, 82nd Airborne for invasions of other countries, unless you're going to see this through. And Trump's increasingly unhinged and megalomaniac rants demanding complete surrender and obliteration and destructions and mass numbers of death. Cartoon villain much?
Yeah, well, George, we've commented here in other places about the level, unprecedented level of censorship. So it's even now, a week plus, it's difficult to get an idea of what is happening in this war. Now, of course, those of us that peruse X and Telegram channels will get an inkling, get an idea. Of course, we never know if it's AI or it was something 5 years ago or it was a 12-day war. I mean, it's very difficult for me. And so I'm very cautious here. But even if I take 10%, 3% of what I've seen, what is Donald Trump saying? Unconditional surrender?
That's a very good question. And I quite agree with you that it's very hard to figure out exactly what's going on. I mean, you have one side presenting in one set of views, the other side. Now, when Trump presents unconditional surrender, everyone remembers, well, of course, World War II. Now, what did that mean? That means total, complete obliteration of Germany and Japan.
The case of Germany, occupation.
Exactly. Occupation that went on for But
Today.
Got it.
Today.
Exactly. I was gonna talk about the 45 years when the withdrawal of Soviet forces, but the occupation has continued for the non-Soviet forces. So it's gone on. But what unconditional surrender means, all power over your life is handed over to someone else. Now, no one's going to accept that. And it was even obvious at the time of World War II that, well, once you've made that demand for unconditional surrender, means the war is just going to go on because there can be no negotiations, any attempt to carve out something for yourself is impossible. So therefore, unconditional surrender means the war continues. And that's clearly what Trump's agenda is. And so when we had that statement by the Iranian president, which was a kind of a conciliatory statement, Trump willfully misinterpreted what he said and then declared, oh, well, he's surrendering. He's surrendering. And then, the Iranian officials, particularly the foreign minister Araghchi, had said, well, no, you've misinterpreted what the president said. He was offering a kind of a de-escalation, a regional de-escalation, but you interpret it as surrender. So what Trump is now doing is he wants to really go all the way in. And the things that he has said, not just the unconditional surrender, he's saying, well, we're going to change Iran's final borders. So it's already, that's already up for grabs. So there's no way, there's no possible leadership that could emerge within Iran that could negotiate anything. And in any case, Israel has said, whoever appears, whoever is selected as a leader of Iran, we will assassinate him. So there's nothing other than just to continue with this total destructive war.
Mark, you were in the military. There's been this question. I mean, the way I look at it is it's a asymmetrical war of attrition. Is that a good way of looking at it? Because obviously Iran is taking on the full strength of the collective West here, or almost the entire collective West. Can it withstand that? At the same time, again, if we just take 2% of the imagery we're seeing out of the Gulf countries and Israel, who can outlast the other?
Okay, so if we take a look at what has happened over the last week, with the forces that the U.S. originally had assembled for this illegal, unprovoked act of aggression, this war on Iran, Iran is doing well as best as can be expected. I think certainly far better than the U.S. and Israel thought they would do. The decapitation strike was successful, in my opinion, because of the naivety or stupidity of the Iranian leadership in showing up in one location along with the supreme leader and his family. But lines of succession were in place, and command and control was devolved with a mosaic defense to area commanders, and the retaliations began immediately. And they were significant, and they're targeting both the energy infrastructure in the region, which is leading to a global economic crisis, right? If you're going to take us down, well, we're going to take everything down with it, or we'll give you try to cause you enough pain to make you stop, and also military targets. The U.S. lost $3.5 billion worth of their most advanced radar in the Middle East in this last week, which they're still trying to deny, but already Washington Post, CNN have had satellite data, provided thoughtfully by the Chinese to help us out here, concurring this. The U.S. is still conducting standoff strikes. They have not been able to whittle down Iran's air defense enough yet that they can send their own aircraft into Iranian airspace. And that's a problem because they have very critically low levels of munitions such as Tomahawks, JASSMs, and so forth. As long as Iran can stiff arm the U.S. and keep them outside of their airspace, then the U.S. is going to run out of offensive missiles, just as they're running out of air interceptors for defense of Israel and the Gulf states. However, if they are able to take out enough of Iran's air defense to then begin to move into Iranian airspace, then they can start using JDAMs, old dumb bombs with glide kits. And as Trump it intimated in a previous post, they do have an effectively infinite number of those. And then that would be close air support and bombing of Iran literally to the ground, presumably accompanied by inciting insurgents, the Kurds, the Baloch, the Azeri, and simultaneously a U.S. invasion. That Iran is probably not capable.
Well, I mean, that's a very interesting scenario, but nothing has gone to plan to date. So we have to keep that in mind here. And critically, George, the administration, the Trump administration, denies it was behind the bombing of that school that killed so many young girls here. Even Western media is confirmed that it was an American strike here. I mean, what does that tell you about this administration and the way they're following through on their demand of unconditional surrender?
Well, that's a very good point. Of course, even on this issue of the school, they are coming up with some mixed messages. Trump is the one who said it wasn't us, it was the Iranians that killed their own children. But when Hegseth was asked, and Trump was there, they turned to Hegseth, and he said, well, we're looking into it. Now, when U.S. officials say after more than 8 days, we're looking into it, that's pretty much an admission that, yes, the United States was involved. Because if there was even the slightest way that they can present the case that somehow Iran did it, that it was a false flag attack, the United States would have been, you know, shouting at the top of its lungs. The fact that they're still looking into it after 8 days means it's essentially an admission. And at some point, you know, about a week or so, they will quietly admit, yes, we did it, but it was all the fault of the Iranians anyway, because they put a school near a military facility. I mean, that's going to be there.
Well, I mean, but George, it seems that quickly, Mark, before we go to the break here, again, we're in the fog of war here, but the attack on that school is being reported by many as a double tap.
That is a more complicated, because it is easy to understand, if not to excuse, a missile going astray or diverted via electronic warfare or something of the sort. But it is harder to explain a double tap. And I mean, I don't believe that the U.S. was wasting missiles intentionally on hitting a school and then double tapping it to make sure everyone died. I really don't believe that they were doing that. But it probably indicates serious information problems, which is a whole nother, and calls into question, of course, exactly how much air defense and ballistic missile launchers the U.S. and Israel have been able to take out, if they can't even correctly identify a girls' school from a naval base.
All right, gentlemen, I'm going to have to jump in here. We're going to go to a quick break, and after that break, we'll continue our discussion on Trump's war against Iran. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing Trump's war on Iran. You know, George, in the first part of the program, Mark gave a very detailed a possible scenario, which would include ground forces under the proviso that the United States was able to eliminate Iran's ability to defend its skies. And I've known Mark a long time, and he's been right on most things, particularly when it comes to the military. But let's delve into history. This was supposed to be Iraq was supposed to be a cakewalk. Syria took over a decade of a dirty war. Libya is still a destroyed state here. And chaos is always a possible destination for American foreign policy and the Israelis here. But my whole point is, George, is that these capers, as you like to use, have been tried many times before and they never work out the way you expect. I mean, outsiders like ourselves looking in say this all of the time, but it doesn't seem to enter the minds of policymakers, George.
No, that's right. Well, the United States had 500,000 in South Vietnam in 1968. That wasn't enough to win that war. The invasion.
Well, I mean, and speaking of the Vietnam War, the Americans won every single battle and lost the war.
That's right. But you know, they failed in the most important way, which is to set up a government that had some measure of legitimacy and support among the people. They failed there, and therefore it didn't matter about the battles. But Iran is just much bigger than Vietnam. It's a huge country. I mean, talking about 93 million population, it's vast, mountainous terrain. The United States doesn't have the resources to occupy any large parts of the country. And no one is going to join the United States. The British aren't going to join the way they did in Iraq. You know, no one else is going to do it. So it'll be all up to the...
Well, I think Zelensky might send
some forces, but Israel is certainly not going to send anyone. I mean, Israel isn't going to do that. So that's a tall order. Now, so far, the Kurds, then, you know, Trump was sort of talking about the Kurds the other day. The Kurds are kind of, you know, decided to, you know, keep their powder dry because...
I think they had a bad experience
in the recent past, and including Trump. Trump himself, it was just a few months ago when he basically told the Kurds, well, the jig is up. You're going to have to do what Jalani tells you to do. So, they've already made clear they're not at all keen to get pummeled if they join the war. So, and also Turkey has already warned that they're not going to accept any kind of arming of the Kurds in Iraq. So... Trump's, you know, this kind of talk of, oh, we're going to use our ground forces, I think it's just a lot of empty talk. And there isn't the public support for it in the United States. He has no support among his base. This is very different from George W. Bush in 2003. First of all, I think the United States had more resources than for an invasion. But in this case, there's clearly the polls are showing there is no support for this war. And if he starts talking about ground invasion, that support is just going to quickly dwindle down into the single digits.
Yeah, he doesn't seem to be a person that's particularly concerned with public opinion. I mean, he's not up for re-election, and he single-handedly, in a very short order, destroyed MAGA. MAGA's gone, okay? It doesn't exist anywhere. There's dead-enders now. That's it, in a cult. That's what's happened here. Mark, what you said in the first part of the program, it just absolutely fascinates me. Even more so because, you know, we for weeks and weeks were saying, well, you know, rationally, Trump should look for an off ramp. Rationally, a new nuclear deal, which wouldn't be particularly different. Well, and at the end of the day, the Omanis said there was something they had made progress. I mean, I feel that we're all captured by common sense, but this war happened and it is happening. So realistically, Mark, could Trump order a land invasion of Iran? I mean, I was looking at a topographical map of Iran. That's a nightmare. Yeah, that's a nightmare. I mean, where would you even go in? Particularly if the Kurds are saying, we're going to sit this one out or until you pay us more money, Mark.
Yeah, if you take a look at a topographical map, Iran is mostly mountains and valleys. I mean, it's a huge country. It's three times the size of Iraq, much larger population. It is a nightmare. But the Trump administration is its own nightmare, and they're not operating from a place of rationality or logic, and they're on this neocon Viagra kick. They openly say that they're going to appoint the next leader of Iran the way they appointed the new, as far as they are co-opted, the new leader of Venezuela, which, by the way, just transferred its gold to the United States to keep it safe under Delcy Rodriguez. But I would not have believed several weeks ago that the U.S. would seriously be talking about a ground invasion. But their initial regime change attempts, the first week having failed and looking at a long-range strike war of attrition, while Iran makes the global economy scream like the U.S. is used to doing, I start to see a scenario take place here. The initial goal would not be a large-scale ground invasion of Iran. The initial goal would be to force open the Strait of Hormuz by force, which would necessitate taking control of several islands off the coast of Iran and probably the port city of Bandar Abbas. That is the way it starts. But of course, mission creep, that is never the way these things end. That does not mean the Iranian government and nation or, you know, society as a whole would accept that or, you know, then surrender and capitulate. And of course, that would necessitate putting more troops in and more troops. And I would not be surprised if we're looking a year from now that we're talking about the U.S. Instituting a draft and needing to put 500,000 troops on the ground in Iran. And then, of course, the question becomes geopolitical. Will Russia and China stand by where the entirety of the West, you know, with the U.K. and France and Israel and Germany, it seems really hot under Merz to get involved, tries to destroy and dissect Iran, a critical component of the BRICS plus, of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, and to any future hope of a multipolar world? I don't think they can. Strikes at nuclear facilities, ballistic missiles, that sort of thing, that's one thing. But a literal attempt to destroy and dissect Iran, I don't think it's something that Russia and China can stand by and let happen, which starts rolling us up into more familiar World War III type. And U.S. troops, speaking of lack of rationality, were told over this last week by their commanders, coming from the Secretary of War, the Christian Zionist Pete Hegseth, that the U.S. is attacking Iran to provoke the apocalypse, to facilitate the second coming of Jesus Christ. Now, there are crazy, fanatical religious extremists in this conflict, but it's not the Iranian government.
That's for sure. You know, George, my next topic is a topic that I fear most. But we haven't talked enough about how much damage is Israel is how much damage has been inflicted on Israel. Israel is a nuclear power, and if they see, and again, if I just take 2 or 3% of what I've seen, they've got to be thinking about using their nuclear deterrent. And I think we have to speak seriously about this. If Iran gets to the point where it is destroying the Israeli state, the Israeli state will not only attack Iran with nuclear weapons, probably everybody else in the process, too. How serious are you thinking about this?
I think it's a very realistic prospect because, of course, Iran obviously still has something in the tank. It still has the hypersonic missiles. If it launches those against Israel, Israel will react with nuclear weapons. I mean, there's no question. Israel is not bound by the same constraints that every other nuclear power in the world has been bound by since 1945. Israel is ready to use nuclear weapons. I mean, it boasts of the Samson option. That's what the Samson option is. We're ready to destroy the world for the sake of Israel. So Israel would absolutely use it, and the United States under Trump certainly would support this. So I think that's still very much in the tank. Now, the other aspects of it is the escalation. We're now having these attacks on desalination plants. That's a serious business. And it seems that this was started by the United States. The attack was on an Iranian desalination plant. Now there are reports that Iran has targeted the desalination plants in Bahrain. So we're getting into a very serious escalation. And then when Trump was asked about this, he started blabbing on about cutting babies' heads off and cutting women in two. Nobody knew what the hell he was talking about.
Not him.
But the fact is, he had no answer to this question. I mean, you know, well, you attacked the desalination plant of Iran. Is that what you're planning on? You know, these attacks on desalination plants throughout the Middle East. He had no answer to that. So these are all things that could happen really within the next few days.
Yeah, and on top of it, Mark, there's much of the talk when it comes to the Straits of Hormuz is about the shipment of oil. How about the shipment of fertilizer? You know, and now we're talking about parts of the globe that will be food insecure and pretty fast.
Yeah, Mark. There are lots of second level and third level effects from the closure of the Strait of Hormuz. And if the U.S. starts attacking Iranian desalination plants, well, all of the Gulf states that host U.S. military bases and Israel also depend on desalination plants. And Iran certainly retains, whatever they may say, the long-range strike ability to hit back at them. The closing of the Strait of Hormuz has stopped oil shipments. Iran's attacks have forced Qatar, the second largest exporter in the world of LNG, to stop operations completely, which will shut them down for months, even after the conflict ends, which means global gas prices, high Europe, are going through the roof. Well, first of all of this leaves Russia looking very pretty in terms of energy prices, at least for the time being. But also food goes through the Strait of Hormuz, food, fertilizer, on a daily basis, because the Gulf states are not self-sustainable in terms of food, fertilizer, or anything else. So food, fertilizer, water, this war starts to look very nasty very quickly. And Israel facing withering Iranian retaliatory strikes, including from new ballistics with something between a cluster munition and a MIRV, a multiple independent reentry vehicle. Very, very interesting missiles that Israel is.
Sorry, Mark, I have to jump in here. We've run out of time. Fascinating discussion. I want to thank my guests in Budapest and here in Moscow. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Prostok rules.